People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. And you know by now that Agatha Christie's thriller Black Coffee is pulling in the crowds at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. And I have another of the cast members with me today, and that's Anne Williams, who plays the role of Caroline Amory. Now, I'm sure you know the name Anne Williams from this broadcasting world of ours. 40 years' experience in television production and direction, a familiar name in South African arts and the entertainment industry. She's the recipient of two Artie's Awards. Remember the Artie's Awards? Two Star Tonight Awards, an NTVA Award, and 10 other television award nominations. Anne is a multi-camera director, producer, and television consultant, mainly in the entertainment genre, and in fact is considered one of the most experienced television professionals in South Africa. And interestingly, Anne is also experienced in front of the camera as well as behind it. She was one of South Africa's first television continuity announcers and over the years has been a presenter of numerous television magazine programs. She's worked in Radio 2, on SAFM as an arts reviewer, 5FM as a newscaster and entertainment reviewer, LM Radio and Classic 102.7. And she has her own production company, Anne Williams Productions. Sure. Anne, welcome. I thought that was never going to end.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you, Rodney.
It's so nice to see you again and so nice to see you up on the boards. Is it serious that you've not been on stage for a very long time?
The last play I was in was an Agatha Christie, Murder at the Vicarage, which was 40 years ago.
40?
Yes.
How come you've not done more stage work?
Well, I think the obvious thing is that I went into television production. I began work at the SABC as a production secretary. In those days, that's what they were doing. They were recruiting people to learn this brand new genre that nobody knew about in this country. And we were trained by the BBC, and it was a wonderful opportunity. But that had been, as I say, a couple of years before Murder at the Vicarage. But then I was asked to audition to be Murder at the Vicarage. I took 3 months' leave from the English Variety Department in television, and I got on the boards and did Murder at the Vicarage, and it was an absolute delight. But I suppose one's training in theatre and speech and drama and English equips you for all sorts of things, absolutely, whether it be broadcasting, being on the stage, producing, directing. I think it gives you sympathy, empathy, and you understand both sides of it. So, no, I've never considered doing it until now.
How did they get you on stage?
Pushed from the wings. Alan Swerdlow, the director, a very considerate and highly compassionate director. And when I auditioned, I said, well, you know, it's been a long time. And his words to me were, trust me, Anne. And I've known Alan a very long time, as you have, from on SAFM when we did the arts programs. And he's been a good friend. So I trusted him. And here we are. We're on stage at Theatre on the Bay. It's really quite extraordinary. And I have to say, being in the dressing room, hearing all the stories and the conversations and the energy between the actors, I'm relishing every moment of it.
It's interesting you say that, because recently I interviewed Ashley Dowds, who plays Hastings alongside Hercule Poirot. And he said what a lovely atmosphere there is among the cast, and that the dressing rooms, what the audience doesn't see, is just an absolute delight.
Oh, he said the same thing. Well, I'm in very august company, I have to say.
Well, look,
and that's extraordinary.
Talking about august company, you've got people like Alan Committee playing Poirot, which I thought he did so incredibly well. Mike Huff, Peter Terry, Ashley Dowds. It's quite a cast, and a big cast.
It's a big cast, and an exceptionally beautifully styled production.
It does. It looks lovely. Mm. When you spoke about how long you'd known Alan Swerdlow, I must just tell a little anecdote. The first time I knew about Alan Swerdlow was in Durban in the early 1980s when he was still acting, and he played Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I remember him being brilliant and then interviewing him and not being able to tie up the person I was interviewing with this extraordinary puck that he had. So he has been around a long time. And in fact, he directed the last Agatha Christie here.
Yes, Witness for the Prosecution.
That's right, that's right. Mm. And so when you got on board and started working, was it exciting?
It was daunting, to be truthful, because it's the memory muscle and all of the things that you know are there have to be woken up. And very supportive people around me. Everybody actually is in the same boat, just less of a boat than me.
Okay.
And we had a wonderful rehearsal period as well. Coming down here, it was a really quite a tight get-in. But again, great company and everybody giving it their very best. So I think we're now settling, well, I'm settling in and beginning to thoroughly enjoy it.
People must watch out for you, because I remember when I was at the opening, I thought halfway through the first act, when does Anne Williams appear? And of course, you're the first character almost on stage, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And one's hair pulled back in a, a bun. And
they have made you look rather old, by the way.
It's actually me.
I know.
The, you know, here we are. There's no extra makeup. This is the age. And I'm playing the age of who she really is. And she's a formidable character.
Yes.
Sort of head of the household and yes, that sort of thing.
Yes. Rather like that woman in Downton Abbey.
Yes.
Whose name I can't remember at the moment. But anyway, you were telling me, Anne, that Alan was also trying to make you bigger because you're used to television, where everything is kind of smaller. On stage, you have to let rip a bit. Tell me just about that.
And reach the back of the theatre.
Exactly. Project.
Project. Keep that breath going, Anne.
Yeah.
Yes, at one stage I thought, oh, come on, she's being, Aunt Caroline feels like she's quite extreme here. Mm. And I said, Alan, are you? Yes, it's fine. She's coming out. Aunt Caroline's coming out.
Trust me.
Trust me. And boy, does she come out. Yeah. Although she's very demure. She's keeping control of the household.
She's certainly not hysterical.
No, she's not hysterical. And somebody, as she says, has to keep their head on their shoulders. And that's what I try to do through most of this. And she's got some nice soft edges, actually. She's very fond of her nephew's wife, Lucia. She has a daughter that she's fond of, who's a little wild and wayward. But deep down, Aunt Caroline is a very caring woman. She just keeps control.
Well, there you are. Now, look here. Anne Williams is my guest. Tell me about your first piece of music. What are we going to hear?
The song I've chosen, it's off Chicago's Night and Day Big Band album. I love it because it's the kind of music I enjoy, Night and Day, but it's got an African introduction. And it's such a clever combination, taking the sound of traditional big band, and I have a passion for big band, which we'll talk about, but combining it with the amazing band Chicago. So that's what it is, Night and Day, from Chicago's Night and Day Big Band album.
She amo, sotora sashi.
Cole Porter's memorable tune, Night and Day, and it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Anne Williams, who plays the role of Caroline Amory in the play. You said, and just before we played that, that big band music is very special to you. Is that what you enjoy listening to most of all?
Not always, but certainly it gets me going. Mm-hmm. I know that it's probably from my heritage, British family growing up in Grahamstown, and we had a very strong music, drama, cultural vibe going in the town, and there would be always some kind of music on. Mm-hmm. And big band really came to my attention in the English variety department of television production, mm-hmm. which is the lighter side of music. And we did big shows and that sort of thing. But Jerry Bosman became my boss, and he had a wonderful, wonderful man, and a wonderful big band man.
A wonderful musician.
And a wonderful guitarist, musician, great orchestrator, conductor. Mm. And he was a marvelous influence in my life. I give him so much credit for him supporting me through my career. And one of the series that he allowed me to produce when I became, well, we used to call them producers then, but nowadays people say directors, but that he allowed and suggested and supported all the way was something called Big Band Beat, which was a six-part program in which we had a band in studio, we had guests in the studio, we had singers, dancers. It was all recorded live to tape. And that really got my adrenaline going. And I thought, this is the music I like. Plus, we had been to America a couple of years before that, myself and Ken Kirsten, the late Ken Kirsten. I was his assistant producer in those days. And we'd gone to America, to Los Angeles, to do a show with Juliet Prowse called Juliet Prowse in Hollywood. But before that, we had a stopover in New York. And I went with Jerry and his wife Mary to see Duke Ellington's Sophisticated Ladies.
Well, lucky you. Good for
was
me.
I not lucky? And then it was absolutely sealed. So that's where one of my many music loves lies. Big band.
Big band music. So you mentioned this one with Jerry Bosman. Have you done a lot of music in the course of your career?
Yes. Because of being in the English variety department, we did all sorts of things in those early days. Because we're talking 1975.
It's a long time ago.
I did 20 years of it. And it was the fundamentals. It was the seminal part of the whole of the industry. So the kind of shows we would do would be game shows, variety shows, music shows, and big awards shows. So it was always music driven. And there were those exciting days of musicians coming into studios with great arrangers, great conductors, creating many different kinds of shows. In my own capacity, the kinds of shows we did were sometimes portraits of. So I did six and Ken Kirsten did six. It would be Zane Adams, Jose Fernandez, Marley Kelly, Leslie Ray Darling. We took South African artist Neville Nash and created specials around these artists with an amazing choice of music and a thread woven through of their histories and so on. It was really a golden age of television. We used to get into a lot of trouble sometimes with bosses because of the people we were choosing.
Oh dear,
and we
it was the 70s and 80s.
Yes, it was. Yeah. But we fought through it and did some wonderful things. We also were the originators of Pop Shop.
Oh, really? And what a success that was. Gosh, that
wasn't it?
That takes us back, Pop Shop, David Gresham and co.
Absolutely. And also there was Good Vibrations, which was the softer side of the music, and that was presented by Malcolm Gooding.
So were you involved with both Pop Shop and Good Vibrations?
Good Vibrations, yes.
As director?
Well, in those days, as I say, we came up the ranks. You began as a production secretary, which meant that you were the left hand, right hand, and center of any producer. And I worked with Bill Forrett and Ken. And we so then you would go up the ranks, become an assistant producer, and then become a producer eventually. But gosh, they were huge productions. They were big, mammoth.
And it sounds as though you absolutely loved it.
I loved every second, Rodney. I would be down in the studios, television studios, even if it was not something that you were involved in, be watching the dramas, watching Salome being shot, the Spanish ballets, the Mercedes Molina dance company. There was an extraordinary buzz in those studios.
And it was good. The stuff was good, I remember. Watching those variety shows on SABC, whatever, one, two, or three, were very good productions. They were world class, I'd like to say.
Well, we were
trained.
And
I'm sure you're going to agree.
Well, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. We were trained by the BBC. Our training courses ran 3 to 6 months. In their wisdom, the SABC management brought in them, those gentlemen and women, who taught us all, not only technically, but the production values. And to this day, I still hold on to those. When you watch the BBC Strictly Come Dancing, you know that it is exactly the same principles that we were taught 40, 50 years ago, because it's scripted. It's shot for shot. There's not a beat missing. It's cut on the beat. It flows. And those are the same values that still exist there, and I like to think that we hold on to them, not necessarily much more anymore.
Well, no, it's not really happening anymore, is it? Because of there's nothing.
None of those big shows can happen. Well, they do, but it's done minimally by comparison.
Minimalist, yeah, okay. I think it's time for another piece of music while we digest what you've just said. And what have you chosen for your second piece?
Ah, well, there's so many choices. But I chose a Beatles song in my life for one, sentimental reasons, but it's also a very, very beautiful melody and it comes from the heart. But I've chosen Bette Midler's version of it rather than the original.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better, and some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I love them all. But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one compares with you. And these memories lose their meaning when I think of love as something new. Though I know I'll never ever lose affection for people and things that went before, I know I'll often stop and think about them. In my life, I love you
Bette Midler there and that Beatles song. What was it called, Anne?
In My Life.
In My Life.
And it was from the film For the Boys.
Oh, yes, that's right. What a lovely actress Bette Midler was.
Oh, super.
And a lovely sense of humor, comic acting as well. My guest is Anne Williams, who's in Agatha Christie's play Black Coffee on at Peter Drew's Theatre on the Bay, directed by Alan Swerdlow. All the things we've been talking about, have you ever played a musical instrument?
Not one. The...
Those are
the
you
things
love music
you,
so much.
I love, isn't that wonderful? My father was a good musician, natural musician, didn't read music, but he could play a trumpet. He played the piano beautifully. I inherited his banjo, ukulele, and piano accordion. So there was always music around me. But growing up, it was ballet, speech and drama, and music. But the music part I never did follow. I sang. I was in the chamber choir.
Oh, right.
I was at school in Grahamstown, Victoria Girls High. And uh-huh.
And have you ever been back to England to live or to work?
No, I've not worked in England, but I do go back. All my family are in England. Every relative I have lives in England. So I try to get back every 2 years or so. But no, I've never lived in England, although I love it. I do enjoy not only the country life, my one part of the family from the Lake District and the rest are in the Midlands. And I do enjoy the culture and I enjoy the theatre very much when I can afford it.
Yes. And now you've got this long run because this show, Black Coffee, this play is playing here in South Africa right through till almost the end of April, I think, the 26th of April. Then you all pack up and go to Monte Cassino in Johannesburg for another long run.
Another long run. So very popular and I'm very blessed to be doing it. It's marvellous.
And you say the crowds are being pulled in.
Yes. We've had some full houses already.
Well, and so it should. I mean, really. Just going back, because we're in a bit of a nostalgic thing here at the moment, the names we're talking about, but you said earlier about being a television continuity announcer, which were, they became terribly famous back in 1975, 76, when television started. And you were one of the first, weren't you?
I was. Yes, it was very rigid, if you may recall. From 4 o'clock until 8 was English on a Monday, then Afrikaans took over for the last 4 hours. And on Tuesday, it was the other way around, Afrikaans
right,
and then the English.
Right.
So the English presenters on Monday was Yvonne Banning.
Oh, there's a name. There's a name.
Tuesday, Dorianne Berry.
Yes.
Wednesday, me. Thursday, Pauline Bailey. Friday, Mike Hobbs. Saturday, Peter Miller, and Sunday, Bobby Lang.
My goodness, well remembered.
Calling back the past. I had a bit of a stretch there.
That really is calling back the past. And Dorian Berry had a huge career here as well, didn't she, on television?
Also radio as well as television. And we were very lucky, not lucky, privileged is more like it, doing all sorts of programs. It used to go out live. Besides continuity, was other programs, Video 2 did, Silhouette, which was a women's magazine program, and so many of those programs were live, not recorded. Mm. Bang, on air you go. Even Pop Shop, we were on air, you know. So I just had some wonderful times in studio.
Did you ever do any of the soap operas, which were so good as well in their day?
The Villagers.
The Villagers.
Calling back the past. No, I wasn't involved in the drama department, although they were on the same floor as us. And everybody, you know, we're quite a close-knit group of people. But there were some extraordinary dramas produced in those days. Mm. As I said, the series was The Villagers, Grey Hofmeyr, and so on. And the magazine programs, Colin Duplessis, if you remember, Galaxy was the arts
program.
Yes,
that's right. That's right. And they were of such high quality in those days. And I'm sure it's not just me trying to rose-tinted spectacles backwards. But they were of high quality, weren't they?
Mm. You know, that technically it was extraordinary because it was state-of-the-art equipment.
Yes,
and some very good engineers, very good cameramen, sound guys who've all gone on to have great careers in the industry and are now the oldies.
Yes. And this production company you set up, Ann Williams Productions, that's your company that gets hired to do a whole lot of things by the sound of things.
Yes, such as award ceremonies. We've done the Shop, well, it's no longer, but we did the ShopRite Checkers Woman of the Year Awards. Oh, gosh, she suddenly goes blank. Let me think of some of the big events. Working alongside Miss South Africa's, along with combined artists.
CNN African Journalist of the Year.
Yes, that was me. I was working with another production company, Combined Artists, but directing and so on. You know, you end up doing quite a lot of corporate stuff as well, going out, doing inserts. All sorts of interesting work comes your way. So when you're out there, you kind of go, oh, gosh, yes, no, I'll have, of course, yes, we can do that. But I also have done radio. I still do radio and love radio. And I think it's very broad, the kind of work we can do. But at the same time, I'm sounding like I'm contradicting myself. But there is a niche. If you're in the entertainment or the awards ceremonies, we've done, again, pageants, beauty pageants and that sort of thing, you do understand them and you therefore understand the foibles thereof. But I've never taken to drama, and yet that's what I studied. At one stage, when the late Roy Sargent was heading up the drama department at the SABC, he said to me, come on, come over to me, you know, and I'm going, no, I'm very happy here, thank you, in my song and dance world.
It's your song and dance world. My goodness, did it come right from your youth, Anne? You said you grew up in Grahamstown, and when you were very young, you mentioned your father having all these instruments. Did you decide, I want to go into this theatre business when you were quite young?
This is how it happened. Grahamstown, the newspaper, Grocott and Sherry. We used to get it twice a week in those days. My mum opened it, and under the you know, the adverts and things. There it was. Speech and drama, Madge Foster. And Mom thought, that's a good idea. Let's phone up this lady. Well, Madge Foster ran a little school in Grahamstown. She was British. She and her friend, who was a music teacher, Miss Singleton, had a little academy, and I was her first pupil. I was seven.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And we used to go to her home, where she had a studio attached, had a little stage. And Madge Foster was the very person who began me in this business. I could read quite well, I think, because I'd started school in England. So I had a year's advantage, and I started again when we got to South Africa. And she was so encouraging, and she fostered such a drive in all of us. So I'd gone through all the exams with her, the South African Guild Teachers Association and all of that. She moved back to England, to Stratford-upon-Avon, as she would.
Yes, lucky her.
And, wow. And I continued. And so by the time I'd got to matric, I'd already actually qualified as a speech and drama teacher. But I knew that it's what I could do. And I liked, I enjoyed broadcasting, I enjoyed the energy that came with it. Added to that was the Grahamstown Amateur Dramatic Society, GADS.
Yes, GADS indeed. GADS.
And everything from Toad of Toad Hall to Andre Obey's Noah to all sorts of productions. You'd be on that stage, whether it was the City Hall and later the Rhodes Little Theatre and that sort of thing. So, yes, it was always there. So it was a natural progression just to step out of VG and into Rhodes University, where I was with Jane Osborne and Beth Dickerson. Professor Guy Butler was the head at that stage, and later Roy Sargent came in. So, yes, it was a natural progression as to whether it was to be on the stage or to be anywhere immersed in this industry. I knew it was for me. Mm-hmm. And then the SABC were recruiting, and they toddled down to Grahamstown, and they came and saw us as final years. There were 10 of us, and said, well, here we are. Let's interview various people. And I was interviewed, and I also happened to meet Ronnie Wilson, who happened to be staying at the motel at the time, where I was working as a receptionist, as a student, earning a bit of, you know, pocket money. And he started talking to me. And there was more encouragement. And I came up for an interview to Johannesburg. I went, and there we are. Bang, I was on a production course.
Wow, Anne. What a lovely story. What a lovely story. And now, all these years later, you're really at the peak of your career. You're very busy. You must be very busy, are you?
Well, not as much. Things change in the production world. There's different requirements, different technology. Not that the production values or any of those systems change at all. But it's a new generation. And I've thoroughly enjoyed teaching and passing on that knowledge, because I think that's important. If we can give a solid foundation to anyone, that's the most you can do. And so they must. Up they must come. Just as I was taught by retired BBC people and sage people in this country as well. So it should be, and pass that on. And I have thoroughly enjoyed doing that and hope to still continue to be able to teach in academies and so on.
So what do you do when you're on a long run in a play like this, since you haven't been in a play for, what, 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
Do you just put the whole thing on hold, or you have a team that looks after it for you?
I haven't done it for a couple of years. So I had been involved at the University of Johannesburg up until a couple of years ago. I still do teach one-on-one if need be, but the call will come. Somebody will say, would you mind coming and giving a lecture or a masterclass, or share your experience with? And I've done that. And then it starts to, you see some of the neurons firing in students, and that in itself is of value to me. I love my radio, though. I'm doing quite a bit of radio. Well, not a bit, but I'm enjoying radio as well.
Where are you doing radio at the moment?
Well, at the moment, LM Radio, but we're Classic 102.7 in Johannesburg.
Right.
That is now, unfortunately, no longer. But yes, if I can be on radio, I think it's actually my first love in a funny
way.
It's
so good to hear you say that, Anne. Here we are on radio as we speak. It's magical, isn't it? The theatre of the mind, magic.
Grahamstown had an SABC on the corner of African Street, the street in which I lived. And so it was always there. I was very conscious of the SABC and radio. And again, in our final year, a production came to Grahamstown, to the theatre of Godspell. Graham Clark, Bruce Miller, Des Lindberg. And we had to see it behind closed doors because it was banned.
Of course it was, yes. Yes. Of course it was.
But the university, I think Jane Osborne, got in Graham and Bruce to come and talk to us. And they took us to the SABC. And they sat us all down in front, our final years, behind microphones and gave us a shot at it and told us a few things. I've told Bruce this many years later. He'd actually said to me, I think you should consider doing some radio work. That was Bruce. Bless
him. Yes.
So we got
another,
to work with
yet
him.
Another late, yeah. Of course, late Bruce Miller. Okay, we're going to have another piece of music now. Right. Anne, what have you got?
I've chosen Juluka and December African Rain.
Time to go. Time, night, show, show.
called December African Rain. Anne Williams is my guest on People of Note this week, the program brought to you by Peter Turin, which is where the play, Black Coffee, Agatha Christie's play, is being played at the moment at the Theatre on the Bay. And Anne plays the part of Caroline Emery. And we see you right at the beginning of the play, don't we, on the couch, being in control.
Being in control of my, what would she be? My niece-in-law.
Yes.
Busybody. She's a real busybody, this character. She doesn't stop talking.
Uh-huh.
And people have to battle to get a word in edgeways with her.
And by the way, when I was talking to Ashley Dowds about this play, I said to him as we began, I said, let's be very careful not to give anything away, not even a hint, because I certainly didn't guess who the murderer was. The person I went with did, almost. He said, I'm sure it's him, I'm sure it's her, I'm sure it's him, I'm sure it's her. But I didn't get it.
The whodunit.
The whodunit.
And everybody sworn to secrecy. Not that you have to sign a form or anything, but don't give it away.
Yes, at the end of The Mousetrap, that famous play that's been running so long, one of the actors has to come forward and ask the audience to keep it a secret. Mm. It's a tradition to do that. Mm. Because if you knew, it would take so much of the fun away. And part of the fun of Agatha Christie as well is the red herrings that are all over the place.
Spattered all over the place.
And once again, Alan Swerdlew, who's directing, has his own special touches, which he had in Witness for the Prosecution. He adds his own little personal bits here and there, which we'll also keep secret.
Good.
But Anne, what happens to you after this production is finished? Are you going to be raring to go back onto the next stage? Has it whet your appetite once again?
To a certain extent, it certainly has. But I think I'm going to lie down for a while. I'll still keep doing some of my radio work and the things that keep me interested and fascinated. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But a jolly good wait. Because, I mean, through the evening, it's not the shortest play, but it's also not over long. It's two acts with an interval, and it's a busy play.
It gallops along, really, yeah, and you have to have your faculties about you because there's so much information coming at you. But we have hardened Agatha Christie fans who are sitting there, and you can hear them going, what?
Can you from the stage?
Well, I'm certainly in the couple of front rows, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, God. Oh, mutton, I said, I told you. And things like that.
Well, you should be out at the interval, because as with Witness to the Prosecution, all you hear around you is, oh, I think it's her. No, I don't think it's her. I think it's him, because when this happened, and it's quite a buzz. Everyone desperately trying to guess what was going on. And Alan, I think, with his touches here and there, is so brilliant, as you've been saying about him. It's interesting that you've mentioned so many people that I also know from my years at the SABC in Johannesburg, and who've gone. And one of them is Joan Brickell. And I think Joan Brickell, you became friendly with her, didn't you?
Well, proudly, I might say. She was a wonderful woman, very generous in herself. A couple of productions that she would be involved in, not as a performer, but as a guest presenter and so on. Mm. And she was very generous to me when she and Louis had been nominated for a Tony Award for, might have been Carousel. I'll have to find out about that. But anyway, Joan had been in New York. They had been, with Louis, had been nominated for a Tony Award. And she knew the director of the television broadcast. And she phoned him up, Walter Miller, phoned him up and said, a friend of mine is coming to New York. And would you be so kind as to invite her to meet you and to be, well, it came down to, I sat in the outside broadcast van of the Tony Awards.
Wow, that's
with him.
Must have been quite a thing.
I was awestruck at the incredible pace at which it worked, how the acts came in, came out. It was just one day's rehearsal, and it happened on a Monday night because the theatres are dark on a Monday. It was one of the most important things that could have been given to me as a gift, and I've always thanked Joan for that introduction. And the only thing I had to bring back for her from America was some Paul Mitchell shampoo.
That's a lovely story, Anne. But she also launched many careers, didn't she, in the world of dance, male and female.
Yes.
The world of musical
theatre. Musical theatre, yes, yes, yes. An extraordinary woman, as was Louis, a wonderful producer. They did wonderful shows.
And they've both gone. Oh, dear. Now, let's fit in another song quickly. What have you got next?
Tananas, a local group. Unfortunately, Gito Beloy, the bass player, is no longer. Steve Newman, wonderful guitarist, and Ian Herman, the most extraordinary drummer and percussionist. And I heard Tananas playing in a little bar in Melville, and what an extraordinary sound. And once again, Jerry Bosman, I said, Jerry, there's this trio, wonderful musicians, please can we do a special? And we had to persuade the greater bosses to do it, but we put them in studio. We had an audience again. And Tananas, to me, are one of the most organic, original-sounding groups in our country. So this is their song, Kabo. Thank you.
Good Newman on guitar, Vito Bala on vocals and bass. Thank you, good night.
That's the group Tananas. I'm glad you gave that big introduction because they really were so good. Steve Newman, are they still extant?
Ian Herman is in America. I think he's in Los Angeles. Gito Baloy was unfortunately murdered. And Steve is still here and still playing, yes.
All right. We're approaching the end of the program, Anne, and I could go on talking to you forever. But one of the things I wanted to mention, which struck me on the opening night, which so many things struck me, was the way it looked. You have said about its period thing, but the furniture, the old telephones, there's even a wind-up gramophone there. It looks so real and so period.
Because it is authentic. Mm-hmm. Production designer and costumes, Sarah Roberts, a lot of detail is included in that set, and along with Alan's contribution, of
yes,
course.
I mean, yes.
they're very close in the way that they see it and saw it. And there it is. It's solid. It's clear. There is extraordinary detail, even down to my knitting bag.
Yes, oh, yes, you've got it.
I've got a knitting bag. I don't knit anything. But I put, and it's that.
Didn't you lose it at some stage?
Yes, I lose a knitting needle.
Oh, you lose a needle.
As one does,
okay.
Down behind the sofa.
Okay.
And even the bell push to call Treadwell,
the butler, yes.
Is the real thing. It's an authentic light switch. Oh, it's a very beautiful set and wonderfully lit by mm-hmm. Dennis Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm. And all those things contribute. I mean, it goes black at one stage, doesn't it? But remember, we're not giving too much weight. No. Shh, shh, shh. But listen, we need to stop now. So you can go and see Anne Williams along with a big cast. It's quite a big cast, I have to say, in Black Coffee, Agatha Christie's thriller, A Whodunit, at the Theatre on the Bay, Peter Tureen's Theatre on the Bay, directed by Alan Swerdlow. With Alan Committee, as when I saw Alan was going to do Poirot, I thought, no, wait, that's pushing it a bit. And Alan Swerdlow said to me, I was determined that it was not going to be Alan Committee. It's going to be Poirot. And Alan's brilliant, isn't he?
He is superb, and he's given it his own interpretation. I think that's quite important.
Not to copy David Suchet or Peter Ustinov.
Exactly so. And it is so. He has done that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Anne, now you're allowed one more piece.
Oh, one more.
And what's that going to be?
Well, it's my absolute very favoritist person. Sting and, well, actually Police, their marvelous band, sort of went from, in my opinion, the Beatles to the Police. But
nothing in between.
So Police. And this is a song called King of Pain. And the very first time I ever saw Sting perform was going up to Zimbabwe to the Amnesty concert that was held there. Again, it was flee out of the country. We'd gone. It was quite a lot of us from the industry contingent, and we sat in the stadium in Harare, and the lights went out, and out of the darkness there was this, there's a little black spot on the sun today, and I went, oh, this! And there was Sting. But the song itself as well has great meaning, and I love the piece of music, so thank you for playing it for me.
And thank you for being here. I know you're busy and you've got a show tonight, but thank you very much for being here and all the best. And come back and visit again in your favorite medium, radio.
Thank you so much, Rodney. It's been a great, great pleasure to be here. I'm always hoping that you'll end this way, but it's my destiny.
It's the same old thing as yesterday.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.